What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action, adding elements of play to your neighborhood. When you think about a strong town, a place where strong citizens and local elected officials work together to make their community more financially resilient, you may not consider play a necessary element. However, in the pursuit of financial resiliency, as Strongtowns, we ensure our readers don't, as our friend Steve Muzan writes in his book, The Original Green, forget that we must build lovable places. Places where people want to live and contribute their ideas and talents. And play, the simple act of going outside and enjoying the environment and atmosphere in your neighborhood, is essential to a lovable place, especially, as you learn in this episode, for children. To help us unpack this action, we have Morgan Lecter Saxby, co-founder at Pop-Up Adventure Play on the podcast, a nonprofit dedicated to making children's right to play a reality through online resources, mentorship, in-person training, and lecture tours. Pop-Up Adventure Play helps individuals and organizations apply the concepts and ethics of playwork approach to support children's play in schools, parks, museums, hospitals, and other community spaces. And the best part? It's all done in a low-cost, low-risk way that allows neighbors to take ownership of the project and adapt it as they see fit. In this episode, you'll learn why play is essential to neighborhoods, and how, with the help of your neighbors, you can create low-cost, low-risk places to play in your neighborhood, including how to pitch the idea to your neighbors, how to commit to the incremental approach as opposed to chasing a multi-million-dollar play facility, and how Pop-Up Adventure Play can help you through every step of the process. Enjoy. Hey there, Morgan. How are you today?
Hi, I'm doing great, thanks. How about you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How's life in Bellows Falls, Vermont?
It is a little gray today, but always beautiful.
Good. I'm happy to hear it. Well, Morgan, so happy to have you on the podcast today. We have a great action to cover together, and that is adding elements of play to your neighborhood. And Morgan, this is a unique conversation to Strongtowns because It's outside of our core message, which is, you know, financial resiliency of cities, towns, and neighborhoods. However, as our president, Chuck Marone, wrote on the blog just this week, you know, in the pursuit of creating financially resilient places, you know, we can't forget to create places that, you know, people also love, places that people want to move to, places that people want to contribute their skills and talents to. And I know I speak on behalf of all of my listeners when I say, you know, play is an essential element of creating places that people love. And I'm so excited to hear from you and how Pop-Up Adventure Play can help people create places of play in their own neighborhoods. Morgan, to get us started, I'd love to learn, what did you and your team observe in cities and towns across the world that inspired you all to start Pop-Up Adventure Play?
Yeah, so Susanna Law, the other person in Pop-Ups, and I, we both started working in the UK in a profession called playwork. Hmm. So we actually come at this directly from children's play. Cool. And we were working in public space a lot of the time, bringing ordinary materials, rope, fabric, cardboard boxes, and so on into usually the little green areas in public housing projects. Awesome. And we were working with the children who played out. But my childhood and was in the US, and I live in the US now. And what we keep seeing in this country and all around the world now is that children aren't playing out the way that they used to, mm-hmm. that previous generations did. And that although screen time and so on is obviously a part of that, what we see much more is an issue around car culture and traffic concerns, neighbors not knowing one another, people not really feeling engaged with public space or knowing what to do there or how to enjoy themselves really in this landscape that we share. And we wanted to take what we knew from this professional background in play work and really combine it with like old school grassroots community organizing, you know, like, because for me, like, play is just the most motivating aspect of human life, right? Like the ability to come together around a really good time. It's really important. So I feel like I'm already babbling, but so we began from this belief that children are really neglected and underserved members of the citizenry, first of all. But living in Vermont now, I can see like the direct financial need to have your younger generation really love this town. Otherwise, honestly, they go.
Yes, that's a great point, Morgan. And I want to talk about, you know, whenever we think about places for children to play, I know I fall into this trap too. You know, we're all so quick to picture, you know, the traditional maybe playground that we see in master plan developments, the playgrounds that we played during recess growing up. And from the projects that I've read on the Pop-Up Adventure Play website, totally different than the traditional approach. Could you explain y'all's approach of creating places to play?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so one of the questions that we always ask folks at the beginning of workshops is to remember a place that they loved when they were young. Mm. And it is hardly ever a classic playground.
Sure.
It's nearly always like the mud pit at the bottom of, you know, an empty lot or, you know, the creek that their mom told them not to go to.
Little courtyard in the apartment. I can totally think of that one. Yeah.
Right? It was always some like half wild feeling, scraggly place with junk in it, if you were lucky, right? That was the best. So what we want is to recreate as much as possible of that. Like that's why the materials that we choose and that we recommend are always cheap or free, things that kids can make and tear and create and destroy and just whatever they want, really. I think the fixed equipment playground that we imagine when we close our eyes is really old-fashioned, to be honest, and not in a good sense. It's based on very limited ideas of what play is and what it can be and what it means for a child. And even the really good fixed playgrounds these days tend to be designed with adult aesthetics in mind rather than a child's concern, which is, what can I do here?
Elaborate on that more. That's interesting, Morgan.
Ooh, which bit?
The aesthetic parts. I've never considered that.
Yeah, well, I mean, as grown-ups, we love places that look pretty, right? Where we can walk around slowly and feel pleased about our neighborhood. And that's great. I mean, I do it too. But more and more, I think, okay, so we work with communities across the socioeconomic spectrum.
Yeah.
And either people have public spaces that don't work, like that are fundamentally neglected, and then we can often help them reclaim that public space and make it better and make it more beautiful. Or we work with folks where parks are like art galleries for trees, you know, like you can't, places where you can't do anything. And what most kids want to do is like get a little bit muddy and make a crown out of daisies.
Yes, I love that, Morgan. And totally relates to what we talk about as strong towns as well. You know, we talk about incrementally developing neighborhoods, you know, not transforming 10 blocks at a time. And that totally relates to play as well. You know, if a neighborhood has expressed to their council people that they want a place for the children to play, you know, our first thought shouldn't be, you know, let's create this master development, huge playground, or let's spend millions of dollars to create a children's museum. What resonates most with me about the work at Pop-Up Adventure Play, you're like, hey, let's just start with a small step. You know, let's get some of the equipment that we have around the house, common household goods, and test out this idea of creating a place to play. How have, from your experience of working with communities across the world, how have people responded to this approach?
Honestly, it's been astonishing. So we did the first pop-up roughly 10 years ago in New York, and we had no ambitions of like starting a small but surprisingly international nonprofit. Like, yeah, that wasn't the plan, you know? We just wanted to sort of show people this idea and see if it resonated. And almost immediately, folks started contacting us from all around the world, from like Singapore and Uganda and Mexico, wow, City and Austria, like all of these different places.
Yeah.
And asking how they could do it themselves. And that's awesome. We've also learned, I mean, obviously learned a huge amount from working with them about what's, yeah, the same and what's different. Yeah.
To help listeners imagine what a pop-up adventure play project looks like, mm-hmm, how would you describe it to help listeners imagine being in this little pop-up park with their kids?
Yeah. So they are free public events, richly stocked with really ordinary materials. So like a lot of cardboard boxes classically, because it immediately communicates, I think, to folks that, yeah, lots of cardboard boxes. If there are trees in the park, we'll often do hammocks if we haven't been told not to. There will be mixing bowls and duct tape and marker pens and all sorts of weird things. And usually what happens is people, if they didn't know that this was happening, if they're just walking past, for the grown-ups, there's often a long pause of like, what is this? And my favorite question of, is this some kind of art thing?
I love it, Morgan.
Right? I do enjoy that we're making public space a little bit more surreal. Yeah. But usually while we're having that conversation with grown-ups, the kid has like torn away from them and is halfway making a fort.
Cool. I love that, Morgan. And are the neighbors usually a part of this design process?
Yeah, so the folks that we work with tend to be the people who are doing this. So like we'll work with individuals or small nonprofits for the most part, cool, people who want to be making changes in their neighborhoods. So they'll be calling their friends, their aunt with a truck or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And so it often starts like people doing this in their own nearest park. We also obviously work with, you know, parks departments and children's museums and that sort of thing. Yeah. Usually because one of these individuals introduced us.
Cool. I, yeah, love it, Morgan. I want to talk more about, you know, this concept of building a place where we love, you know, where the parents love it, the kids love it because they have an opportunity to play. From all the projects that you guys have helped create with Pop-Up Adventure Play, can you share any stories of how you witnessed it improve the livability of a neighborhood?
I think for me that question of livability has both short and long-term applications, especially when you're looking, especially when you're talking about children, because children care most about what's happening right now, right? So even just like one beautiful afternoon meeting the neighbors, because often kids don't even know the kids who live near them anymore. But like one afternoon playing with their family, making new friends in public space, like that is livability to a, yes, 6-year-old. Longer term, we've worked with folks who have used this, who have used play events as a way of reclaiming public space from like drug dealers and black market and so on, because, yeah, it's bad for business being surrounded by, yeah, by all those kids. Absolutely. And your grandmother. Like, and I think that story particularly really moves me when it comes up, because it's theirs. Like the people, yes, who live in that community have owned that whole process, and they've done it through play.
I love that, Morgan. And I imagine it makes these public spaces far more accessible as well. You know, you spoke earlier in the podcast about, you know, the adults, they like, you know, like perfect aesthetics and
like the beauty of things, the perfectly manicured park and the perfectly aligned trees that give you that perfect view of the park. And you know, it's great for, like you said, maybe roaming around, snapping a few pretty Instagram photos, but the likelihood of a spontaneous interaction, I'd imagine, is bleak, unless you maybe start tossing a frisbee, as opposed to an approach like this, where, you know, you have this rambunctious park going on. It makes sense. It sparks a curiosity to approach, and I imagine all sorts of great interactions follow. Morgan, I'd love to hear about, you know, what happens after pop-up adventure play introduces some of these projects. You know, I spoke a little bit in the beginning. Why Strong Towns loves this so much is because, you know, it's a bit of a pilot project. You know, it's low risk, low cost way to introduce play into our neighborhoods. If the local elected officials realize, hey, this is a need for the neighborhood. I can tell by all these crazy kids throwing around these cardboard boxes and swinging on the hammocks. Have you ever seen local government respond to a pop-up adventure play project by perhaps creating a more permanent installation afterwards?
Yeah, we have. What tends to happen when folks host their first pop-up is, well, they tend to be very nervous beforehand because it's a bit like throwing a party, sure, isn't it? Like, first you worry that nobody's going to come, and then you worry that everybody's going to come. But so what tends to happen is either they continue to do pop-ups occasionally, you know, once or twice a year, or in partnership with a festival if they feel like it. And that's great. It's a really nice way for local folks to continue to meet and kind of punctuate the year. But another thing that happens really often is that organizer will, like, get the bug for it.
Yeah.
And they will do all of this, like, local follow-up work because, you know, local elected officials are generally swamped. And they will keep engaging and keep advocating and keep building those relationships, like, with the Parks Department, with the Boys and Girls Club, with the Parent Support Group, with all of these other local associations. And either they'll build up, like, a full calendar of events.
Cool.
Or they'll often then shift and start doing, like, after-school programs or summer camps with the kids. And a number of them have been working towards, like, a permanent adventure playground, which is us kind of amazing, because that's the original model that inspired this whole thing.
That's amazing, Morgan. And you're exactly right. It doesn't take too much forethought. Like, I can imagine there's a champion in this neighborhood for these pop-up parks. And, you know, like you shared in the beginning, Morgan, it doesn't take too much equipment. It just takes what you have around the house and a little bit of imagination. And you can make this happen on every given weekend, as opposed to, you know, making sure the blow-up bop house rental is open that weekend. You take what you have, and along with some peers and some fellow thought leaders, you can make it happen.
Yeah.
Morgan, let's shift to how listeners can make this happen in their own neighborhoods. You know, you've done an excellent job of sharing the value of why we need places to play, not only for children, but the benefit it has for adults as well. You've shared some tremendous success stories. If listeners are inspired to do something similar where they live, how do you recommend they get started in this process?
Oh, just email us. Honestly, I mean, we have information online. We're at popupadventureplay.org. We're pretty busy on Facebook too. Thanks to Susanna. That's definitely not me, but that's a great way to get in touch. And we'll welcome you in and send you a free packet of information with suggested materials and handouts and tips. And we sort of see our role as, you know, holding your hand as you go through this process.
How does this start? Like, can someone come to you with just, you know, like you said, that enthusiasm? You know, they see a blighted area. They see a park that could use a little sprucing up for the kiddos. Is it best to come with just that enthusiasm at first? Like, how much work do you recommend or vision the listener has beforehand to really get the best out of this relationship with pop-up adventure play? I'm curious, goodness. Like, what do y'all provide? I know I see these tremendous finished outcomes and tremendous success stories. But how does pop-up adventure help throughout the process?
I mean, honestly, a lot of what we provide is emotional support and encouragement, to be honest, we really do. Because a lot of folks do initially contact us, you know, having seen these images and having a big plan and, you know, we've already bought a trailer, like all that kind of thing. Some people do. But an awful lot of people reach out to us first, like honestly pretty sad, saying, you know, I used to play out, but I can't let my kids do that. Or I've moved to this new town because of my partner's work and I don't know anybody. Or, you know, all sorts of different reasons. But, and I think partly why this model has proved so successful across such different groups is because a lot of people just feel really alienated from one another and from their own playfulness, to be honest. I think that we really want to encourage folks to get in touch as soon as they want to get in touch and not to wait until they have a fully developed idea. Because I feel like it's so easy in our society to want to wait until the timing is perfect, until you're totally prepared. And sort of the secret subtext of this model is don't wait for that. Like that day never comes. Like start small, start now, keep going. That's the advice that we keep giving people.
Morgan, that is so encouraging to hear that, you know, if someone has this idea, they want to do something similar where they live, you will only provide resources and tips on, I'm sure, best equipment to use, how to find the right site. But, you know, as with any new venture, as we encounter all the obstacles and all the discouragements of maybe things not working out, you guys provide that additional emotional support as well. That's wonderful, Morgan. to wrap up, any other success stories you'd like to share? I know you mentioned one before about a neighborhood reclaiming a public space. Any final success stories you'd like to share to inspire listeners to partake in this process locally?
I mean, this feels a little bit selfish to say, but the most moving moment for me recently has been in February. We held our second Campference, which is a big get together. So folks came from 9 different countries to camp out on an adventure playground.
How cool.
And to talk about the programs that they were doing, in their own communities. And that was incredible for me to look around the circle and see people who were doing projects in their suburb, in their, you know, on their city block, at their public zoo, at, you know, all of these different children's museums and parks and old folks, like everywhere that you could imagine. And talking really passionately about the difference that play had made for them. And all, you know, talking about their communities or, you know, the starting a summer of street closures for play or, you know, getting the mayor on board and, you know, all these different things, but also the difference that it had made in their own lives. You know, they were so passionate about the friends they'd made in this work and the way that they now felt connected differently.
Oh, I can totally envision that, Morgan. And like you mentioned before, I mean, it's that sense of ownership. Like, you know, so many times as residents of a city or town, you know, we can be passive, you know, with all the amenities that this city offers. But to be able to have a vision and implement it with your neighbors, I imagine that's essential to really learning to love a place. And very proud of you and Suzanne for the work you guys are doing to help foster that feeling. That's wonderful, Morgan.
Thank you so much.
So, Morgan, this has been an absolute joy. If any listeners want to connect with you, learn more about what's going down at Pop-Up Adventure Play, maybe do their own project locally, where can people connect with y'all online?
PopUpAdventurePlay.org. Our email addresses are Morgan@PopUpAdventurePlay.org and Susanna at the same. Facebook, Twitter, all the usual places. We would love to hear from you.
Very good. Well, Morgan, thank you so much. This has been a joy, and we'll chat very soon.
Thank you, Morgan. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.